FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is the day after the 4th of July, July 5th, 2018. Man, the first half of the year just flew by. Well, what's going to happen here? We got a lot of issues to discuss. We got some of your questions we want to take. As always, just join the conversation. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Today, we've got John Rubino with us. Hey, John, it's not Wednesday, but welcome back.
Hey, Kerry, isn't it Wednesday?
No, it's... Isn't it Thursday? Yeah. I thought it was Thursday.
What day is this? Yeah. These holiday weeks, I lose track of the
well,
days.
Well, it's the worst when they throw one in the middle of the week, because that just totally screws you up. I mean, there's no way you're lost. I mean, it's hard enough living in Florida and not really having a 9-to-5 job. The days have kind of lost all of their meaning anyway. But when
don't even know what season it is most of the time down there, right? It's always sunny.
There's only two seasons, hot and hotter. You know, that's it. That's all we have. Hey, so, well, we got to do a couple of your questions out there because you asked them. The first one is from Ari. Ari, I already kind of answered this on the Triple Lutz report, but I don't want to put words in John's mouth. And John's got an opinion on this. Hey, John, before we get started, so gold has bottomed out. Gold is right around 1260 and silver back over 16 bucks the ounce. I think that's going to be the summer attack. Maybe it'll go down one more time at the most, but then we're hitting the third quarter, solid seasonal territory for precious metals, right?
Yeah, gold has two tailwinds coming up for it now. One is the seasonality, like you said. Towards the end of the year, that's when everybody in India and China start buying gold and silver because it's wedding season and they give precious metals as wedding gifts.
Dowry.
That's a form of savings.
As the dowry in India, they still have such things.
And, you know, you would think that arbitragers would take care of that because it's a seasonal thing that happens every year, you know, and you'd think traders would get in there and smooth out the fluctuations by front running the process, but it doesn't work that way. Every year, gold goes down in the summer and starts to go back up again towards year end and then pops in January. You can see that pattern over and over again playing out. And so assuming that we're going to see it play out again, the seasonality tailwind is approaching. At the same time, we got the commitment of traders report getting more and more favorable. The speculators in the market had gotten a little over optimistic a while ago, and that's a negative for gold and silver. Now they're starting to get pessimistic. They're closing out their longs, they're taking on shorts, and that's usually a positive for precious metals. So we're seeing that play out at the same time seasonality is getting favorable, which means that the stars are aligning for precious metals. And unless something else happens that's bigger than those two things, we ought to see a pretty nice run starting sometime soon. Usually September is when seasonality starts to kick in. So towards the end of the year, things should get really, really nice for precious metals and very nice for the mining stocks because they're really beaten down, even relative to gold and silver. They've underperformed. So they will rocket if gold and silver get into a sustained uptrend and everybody gets optimistic about their future prices. People will be piling into precious metals miners. So look for that sector to outperform over the next 6 months.
Hey, and our cycle guy that we really follow here on the show, Eric Haddock, he thinks 1425 to 1450 could be the high for the year, which right now at 1250, that's $200. It's a good 17% run from current prices. He's not making a call on silver, but silver will no doubt get pulled along for the ride, or silver might lead the ride. Silver just has been resistant to these downward movements. One other thing, Bitcoin's right at 6,600. There's so many interesting things with that cryptocurrency because it's so technical, John. You don't know a lot of things. I had two knowledgeable people. Now, granted, they were hawking their own cryptocurrencies. No, they were cryptos, legitimately. But they said that Bitcoin has a problem when the cost of production goes above the cost of a Bitcoin, meaning if it's selling for $3,000 and it costs $3,500 to make, with gold mines, you got a huge fixed investment. You just slow down your production, but you keep it going because you can defray some of your fixed costs. But for Bitcoin, it's all variable other than the cost of the machines. You just stop on the dime. According to a couple of the guests, they said that's going to affect the ability to validate Bitcoin transactions. I don't know if it's true. I had talked to another person who said, no, it's not true, that there are mining nodes and there are validation nodes. We're going to get to the bottom of this because I'm fascinated by it. But we got a question. Somebody was fascinated by something you've said a number of times, John. This is from Ari. Hi, Kerry. Hope all is well. Been a fan for a while. Much appreciate dedication, variety of interviews. Question for you, John Rubino, regarding your hard asset allocations. You're always talking about prime pieces of real estate, and he would like you to elaborate on that, expand on how you define prime. Do you see opportunities in various types of real estate, such as single-family rental homes? Yes, I do. Multi-unit residential, probably. Farmland, nursing homes, office buildings, retail, trailer parks. Trailer parks are like a natural resource, and they're diminishing. Every community that can shut one down wants to shut it down. Any types of real estate to completely avoid, and then any specific REITs that would make solid investments. If you're not familiar with a REIT, real estate investment trust, they are sold on the stock market, and a lot of guys have made billions selling these things off. Sam Zell, famous vulture investor. All you need to know about that is if Sam is selling, you don't want to be buying. If Sam is buying, you want to be buying. And you'll always go right there. But anyway, kind regards, Ari. And so, John, what is a prime piece of real estate?
Well, right now, you have to understand the context for real estate. We're in a bubble, in a housing bubble, at least. And prices have been going up year after year after year. And now we're above the 2006-2007 bubble level in terms of prices in most markets, which means most real estate is going to go down hard in the coming few years. When the economy turns, then real estate prices will drop. So you don't want to buy random real estate thinking that it's an inflation hedge or something like that at this point in the cycle. And you really want to avoid the big bubble markets. You know, buying real estate in San Francisco would be just insane right now. It would be a terrible idea. But there are lots of markets that didn't participate as fully in the bubble that aren't as economically variable. They aren't cyclical cities. For instance, a college town where there's a state college and that's the biggest employer in town. That's a pretty stable market. And there's always demand for student housing. So a rental house that's near campus would be the kind of thing that would hold up pretty well in a recession. For instance, where I am in Idaho, it's the University of Idaho here. And home prices, they're up some, but they didn't fall really dramatically in the last bust, and they didn't spike in the recovery. And there's lots of demand for rental houses here because the college is pretty much going to have the same number of students regardless of what the economy is doing. So something like that is a decent place to park some money and to generate some cash flow when you're worried about the overall economy. What you don't want to do is go out and buy a condo in a hot market because those things will get crushed. As far as REITs go, they tend to buy broad spectrums of their kind of real estate, and that makes them kind of dangerous. I think REITs are a better short than a long in general right now. For instance, mall REITs, malls are one of those things that they're like coal-fired power plants or something whose time has come and gone. and they're only going to get less valuable over time in general in the aggregate. So the REITs that buy lots of those things will tend to be pretty good shorts going forward, unless we find some new use for malls. You know, we were, before we went live, we were laughing about, Tesla dealerships or homeless shelters. I don't think those are high margin businesses right now. So malls are probably going to be a bad idea, and they might be a pretty good short. So, you know, there's a long short strategy here where you short some mall REITs and you buy a nice piece of rental property in a college town. And in that way, you make the difference between those two. Other kinds of real estate like farmland also tend to do all right because the demand for what they're producing doesn't fluctuate all that much with the economy. We're going to eat about the same amount this year, next year, and the year after, although we should probably eat a little less next year and the year after.
A lot less. At least
I should be.
Have you been to a mall lately? Have you been to a mall lately? It's just heartbreaking to see what this country has devolved into.
You mean in the sense that the malls are going downhill or in the sense that there's a lot of people shopping for pointless crap that they don't need?
Well, all of the above, plus just the appearance of people, the obesity epidemic. All of that, right?
It is. You go almost anywhere in the U.S. with the exception of maybe Boulder, Colorado, and it's shocking. The body types that you see, you know, the percentage of people who are really, really out of shape is amazing. Or go to the grocery store, you know, same thing. The person in front of you is clearly in need of losing 50 pounds, and yet they're buying big things of white bread and 12 packs of Coke and popsicles and stuff, all the things they shouldn't be buying. That's what they eat. So, this is a subject for a complete show here, Carrie. If we talk about how the big food companies fooled us into thinking stuff that they're selling is actually food when it's really not, when it's really just a bunch of chemicals designed to mimic what used to be healthy food. But that's a diatribe for another day, probably. But it has a lot of ramifications.
I would give the example that, look, there is no natural barbecued potato chip. They make it, they make it in a food kitchen. So it's got sugar, salt, and a little bit of sour thrown in there. And what happens is your brain just keeps eating them. It never gets full from them. So it's a perfect food. It's similar to what they do with cows in feedlots. It used to be cows home on the range. Cows would feed off of natural grass on the range. But then they discovered the feedlot, and they lock it into a little stall, and they dump like the waste from sugar beets there. And these cows cannot get enough. And if you've ever had a dog or pet other than a cat, you know that they cannot self-regulate their food. Whatever you put in front of them, they eat. And that's what the human race has become due to food kitchens. Barbecued potato chips are that thing, just like your dog. The dog could eat itself to death, literally. You will eat yourself to death with barbecued potato chips and other flavored foods. They're made in a food kitchen to specifically disable your brain and your body's natural mechanism to say, hey, you've eaten too much. You better stop now. You might get sick, or you're going to be a fat pig. You better stop. But barbecued potato chips have totally disabled that survival mechanism.
I would add frozen pizza to that too, Carrie. Pop it in the oven and you can eat that whole pizza when it's ready, even if you only needed half the pizza.
And you don't eat, when you're halfway through it, you're not even enjoying it, you know? You're really not. There. You're just eating it because it's there. The worst things. But we're digressing. But in any event, REITs, if you've got a nursing home REIT, I think there was one called Weingarten Trust. I'm not recommending it. Is one I followed 20 years ago. Nursing home could be great. Multifamily housing, definitely have good potential. But you want to, like any other deal that you're not running, see what fees they're collecting, what management is scraping off the top, and what there is actually flowing through to the shareholder. The good thing about it, they're required by law to distribute 90% of their profits two shareholders, with a few minor exceptions, and don't call me on it. Anyway, so that's the explanation there. Prime is in the eyes of the beholder. I'll go back to what Benjamin Graham said, the father of security analysis, modern security analysis in the country, in the world. He said, you can have a great company, and we all know them. It could be a phenomenal company, but at some point, it'll be priced so high that even though the company is great, the security itself becomes speculative. And that's the same thing with real estate. You could have the best real estate in the world if you own the Empire State Building, but at some point, the Empire State Building becomes so costly where you have a negative cash flow just for the privilege of owning it that it's not worth owning it. And that's like that with any investment, John.
Yeah, Kerry. Well, a couple of other final things about REITs. One is that they pay an interest rate that is fairly unchanging. It might go up a little bit over time, but not much. And in a rising interest rate environment, they become less attractive because, you know, all of a sudden a bank CD is paying almost as much as that REIT over there. And the bank CD is presumably a lot safer. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the environment in which this is happening. And if rates continue to go up, any kind of fixed income investment is going to suffer because they're then competing with money market funds and bank CDs. And with something like a nursing home REIT, for instance, theoretically, that's a great idea because we're aging. More and more people need nursing home services going forward. But if we get poorer all of a sudden because of a financial crisis, which you and I think is coming, then fewer and fewer people can afford nursing home services. So you've got a plus and a minus in the environment out there, aging people, but poorer aging people. So it's hard to know how that shakes out because we don't know how bad the financial crisis is going to be. We know how fast people are going to age. Demographics are easily predictable, but we don't know what the next recession is going to be like. And I suspect it's going to be a nasty one, which means anything that is anything that's a choice for people is not going to do well because we're going to scale back our spending on things where we have a choice. We won't scale back on things like food because we need to eat, but we will scale back on stuff where we can decide whether or not to write that check this month. And a lot of real estate falls into that category. You know, most retail real estate, where people can decide whether or not to go to Macy's or whatever, that's going to suffer. So it's, in other words, it's a complicated subject, but there are a few things that are clearly probably good and a few things that are clearly probably bad. And, you know, your more financially sophisticated listeners out there probably should consider long short strategies where they bet against the stuff that's clearly bad and go long the stuff that's clearly good.
So in other words, if you got an extra room in your house and mom and dad or mom or dad are getting on in years, you might want to start preparing it because the nursing home assisted living might be too costly and it might not be an option after the next great recession strikes. Hey, so speaking of Teslas, Tom sent us an email. I'm sure Tesla stock owners and the new buyers of the Tesla Model 3 are excited for Elon's breakthrough. Over 5,000 models made this week. But who really wants a car that was hurriedly made in a tent just to meet market expectations? I'm sure there'll be fine, trouble-free quality automobiles. Not. Musk is a lawsuit in the making. Great minds with great dreams rarely coincide. Well, we did have Edison. We've had a number of great innovators. Xerox, the guys who did that. Watson, IBM. So sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But John, if you saw that picture in Zero Hedge, they've got like this big tent and they've used it to create a fourth assembly line for Tesla Model 3s. And last week, for the first week on record, they broke 5,000 copies produced. But what Tom is expressing here is his skeptical mindset towards Tesla. And is it enough to make a difference? You know, 5,000 Model 3s and multiply that times 40,000 per copy, and you know, you got $200 million worth of sales right there.
Well, Tesla is such a fascinating story because, and I should say right up front, I'm short Tesla, although less short than before. You
good
know,
move.
I've taken some profits in that. But, you know, Teslas are just beautiful cars. You know, they're really pioneering electric cars. They're apparently incredibly fun to drive. They look really good. They've got all these really futuristic features that where, you know, you walk up to it and it sees you coming and unlocks the door for you, stuff like that. So on the one hand, amazing product. And on the other hand, you've got questions about execution, because starting a car company from scratch, which is what they've done, and then ramping up a mass market sedan where, you know, you're not talking about a few hundred cars a month. Now you're talking multiple thousands of cars a month. That's a hard thing to do. And they haven't done it seamlessly. And it's possible that they missed their window. They could have been, the iPhone of this market, where a Tesla is the only electric car that you want to have because it's the by far the best technology and it's really the only competitor in the market, which is what the iPhone was early on. Now that's not the case. You've got every luxury car maker out there bringing out their own electric cars. So you've got Jaguars and Mercedes and Porsches that are comparable or in some ways better than Teslas. And all of a sudden, the Tesla name isn't this iconic thing that stands way out from the crowd. You've got a lot of other choices. And you've got some lower end models like the Chevy Bolt, which is winning all kinds of awards. It's supposed to be a really, really good low end electric car. So there are choices out there. And now Tesla, meanwhile, has borrowed huge amounts of money to build out its productive capacity. And it needs to generate massive amounts of cash flow in the short run to avoid having to go back to the market and borrow more money or issue more stock. And if they do have to go back for more capital, that's going to impact the value of their existing stocks and bonds. In other words, the stock price goes down if they have to sell, you know, $2 billion worth of more of new stock. And mm-hmm. Same thing with their bonds. Their interest rate goes up. And that impacts their cash flow going forward. So they've got these financial and operational questions that are being hotly debated out there. And a lot of people think they just can't do it. You know, next time they have to go to the market, it's going to be on really unfavorable terms. And that's going to start a death spiral that requires them to borrow even more money in the future at even more unfavorable terms until they just can't make it anymore. And there are other people who think that, you know, once they're producing their 5,000 cars a month, their cash flow goes massively positive and then they're self-financing and then it's off to the races. Mm-hmm. We'll see. It seems to me that the bears have a better argument right now, mm-hmm. but you never know. Elon Musk is an amazing guy who's pulled a lot of rabbits out of a lot of hats over the years and done a lot of amazing stuff. So you can't write him off. But I think it's a highly risky proposition right now, but also one with a lot of upside. So it's really speculative. And it's a great story regardless. I mean, leaving aside the will the stock go up or down part of the Tesla story, it's still fascinating because electric cars are the future. They are going to push internal combustion engine cars off the playing field within a decade, I think. You know, mm-hmm. Carrie, when you and I go for our next cars, 5 years from now or 7 years from now, I don't even think we'll look at internal and combustion engine models. I think we'll just limit ourselves to electric cars. And I think that a lot of people are going to have the same attitude just because they're so much better in a lot of ways. Yeah. So the concept of the electric car is going to be huge. It's already huge, but it's going to be world changing. And I think that's a really interesting part of this story that maybe gets lost if you just try to decide whether to short Tesla or not, because Tesla is destined to be one part of this of a much, much bigger story. And it's a very good story, assuming that a few things happen, like we can get enough of the materials needed to build the batteries, or at some point we have to switch to fuel cells, which are another related technology that's coming along that that will power a car while producing only heat and water, no polluting byproducts at all. So the story is great. And the drama is really fascinating right now because you don't know who's going to win. And you really want all of these guys to win. I don't want any electric car maker to fail and go out of business, but Tesla is the big possibility for that right now, because they're facing amazing competition coming along and they haven't proved they can execute yet.
Yep, that is the issue for sure. It'd be interesting to see whether they're successful or not. Nobody can tell this for sure. At this point, too early to know. The headwinds are against them, but according to a person I spoke with who's an expert in batteries, the electric car becomes cheaper than the internal combustion engine powered vehicle in roughly 2022 in most of the world, and perhaps 2024 in the US. That's right around the corner. That's 5 years, 6 years at the most. And once the cost differential is gone, then you're left with a tremendous savings on energy, because it's 1/10 the cost to charge a battery in a car than it is to actually fill it with petrol. So big changes coming, but probably 3 to 5 years at the earliest. But there are going to be more and more options. I mean, look, the Bolt weighs close to 3,600 pounds, and it's a little nothing of a vehicle. If you're an abusive driver to a car like I am, you'll be lucky to get 200 miles on a charge. For most purposes, that ain't going to matter, because the average person drives less than 40 miles a day. But if you drive long distances, if you even want to drive the length of the state of Florida, you'll have to get charged 3 times. And the faster you go, the less range you get. So all things need to consider about, but the future will be electric. Let's see what happens. Hey, one quick thing. We've only got a couple of minutes to talk about it. Supreme Court, we've got Anthony Kennedy stepping down, 81 years old. Figures he did enough damage for one career. Time to hand off the baton to someone else younger, who's got more energy and ready for the fight. So you think that if the Supreme Court somehow overrules Roe versus Wade, you think there'll be a revolution?
Well, to take a couple steps back, I think a lot of people viewed Trump as a one-term president who would kind of disappear without a trace. He'd come in, stomp around a bit, lose the primary next time around, and just be gone.
Wrong.
they weren't counting on the fact that he might get to name 3 Supreme Court justices, which has ever any president had ever been able to do that. That's a lot of
unusual.
People.
FDR did. Obviously, he.
Well, he was president for like 38
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
Like right? Yeah. But you know, Trump might get to do it in 4 years.
Yeah, probably will. There's a high probability that he will, because Ruth Buzzy Bader Ginsburg, she looks like she's about ready to drop any day.
She's 85.
Stay awake. And yeah. Multiple bouts with cancer. Got
to
feel.
But you know, she's not going to retire. They're going to have to. Cart yeah. her out on a gurney.
Oh, they will.
She will not leave voluntarily while Trump is there to name her successor.
Yeah, but, you know, like time has a way of catching up
yeah.
for all of us. And her time is almost up by any optimistic stretch of your observation. If he's there for another 6 years, they will carry her out and forget it then. Then it'll be 6. But also, Sotomayor has acute diabetes. You know, they had to, like, passed out, broken arm or something. She's got a really bad case. Then you've got Breyer. He's 79 anyway. Probably Thomas could be saying, you know, I had enough of this. Let me get out of here, and he'll. When the going's good, and Trump will appoint a conservative judge. So he could conceivably get 4 to 5 picks here, John.
Well, yeah, I mean, if he ends up with a 6-3 majority of very conservative justices on the court, they're free to do anything they want to. And they want to do a lot of things that that the left in the U.S. will find outrageous. For instance, the gay marriage ruling was a 5-4 decision with Kennedy as the swing vote. Well, Kennedy's replacement will not vote that way if that comes up again.
Not necessarily. They would overturn. You know, there's millions of gay marriages, and the Supreme Court, even though they're not supposed to take notice of the real world, they do take notice of the real world, John. So, you know, they might be fundamentally against it or not against it, but believe, like Hugo Black, that it is a states' right matter and it should be left to the states to figure out. But, you know, I just don't think this is going to happen. I really don't.
You know, those guys are going to, if they're a unassailable majority and they have lifetime appointments,
yeah,
they're not going to be that concerned with the short-term societal impact as they will be with the purity of their decisions. In other words, if they sincerely believe that these things are states' issues and it comes before them, they're not going to vote against the fact, you know, they're not going to keep that power within the federal government when they don't think the federal government is constitutionally given that power. So I think it's completely possible that we end up overturning Roe versus Wade and overturning the gay marriage decision with that unassailable of a majority with the Supreme Court.
Yeah. And I just don't believe that the law really works that way. I think that guys who would like to do stuff, revolutionaries, go into the court and it quickly grinds them down. They're quickly confronted with reality that, hey, I have this theory, but now my theory actually has the ability to be played out in the real world. Maybe we better go slower. I think the nature of the institution is conservative, not so much in the standpoint of do we create this right or that, but in terms of do we go back and change the work of the court. Seldom, John, seldom do they ever overrule a precedent for good or for bad. And you go back to Dred Scott, you know, those cases, they just are really hesitant to go and stand things up on their head. So my thinking is, yeah, they all talk a great game, but when it comes down to it, not so much.
Well, this is going to be fun to watch regardless, because things will come up before the Supreme Court that involve abortion or gay rights. And it probably won't be crystal clear going into it what they're going to do. So this is going to be front page news and the source of civil unrest. And if they do overturn decisions that people sincerely believe was a right prior to that, then, you know, the recent riots like in Portland, where we just saw some people get hurt and a bunch of people get arrested and things like that, that'll be kid stuff compared to what happens next. So I think that we're heading into a combination of financial crisis, obviously, and more political turmoil. And the Supreme Court will be part of that process going forward. You know, the elections are going to be adventures in pretty much every major country going forward. But The U.S. Supreme Court is going to be part of that story, because the court is going to change. It's going to be a very different court from what it was 5 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think whether you think what the new court does is right or wrong, what they do will probably add to the turmoil that we're going to see going forward.
Yeah, well, I could see them chipping away at the edges of certain of these rights, like abortion, because of changes in technology that have occurred, things like that. But just out and out reversal, no. I don't believe it's going to happen. The court has never worked that way. It's not about to start. But hey, if they take a page from Trump's book, and Trump's been rolling back executive orders by the last couple administrations, getting rid of regulations, if they become a judicially activist, but not activist the way we normally think of it, then anything's possible. My bet is no. I've known too many judges, and they're just not out. They're just not built that way mentally, but let's see what happens. Anyway, we are done now, John. So make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com, get his newsletter, get our newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, Twitter feed at Kerry Lutz. Email address, don't forget, make my day, send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And John, till next week.
Thanks, Kerry. Till then.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.